Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary, and also a modern worship service, the Sunday Morning Oasis, at 9:15 in the Crossroads Gymnasium. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15 and a Sunday school class for adults in a high school small group at 8 a.m. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
Very good. Well, good morning. We did indeed go to Haiti. I didn't go alone, though. We had a group of 28 folks, many who were with Mississippi Valley, and we met up with some folks from Springfield, Missouri. And I'll tell you, we had some expectations going in. Myself, and I'm almost embarrassed to say, I thought we were going to be walking into some dirty, downtrodden, and despair-ridden places. I looked at it, and I have what I know on media, I have what I have from research, and honestly, I thought we were going to be walking into a pretty disparaging, area. And the UN, on their list of developed countries, you find Haiti right at the bottom, about three from the end. And I don't know about Wayne, but my vision of going in was very simply, all right, well, our job is to somehow try and bring joy to these people. Wayne, what were some of your expectations?
Right. First of all, in the first two services, I want to say thank you, church, for your prayers and for, all the good words, encouragement, and also I'm going to say bonjour to those that are streaming this morning. I may have some family members out there, so bonjour is what we used of a morning down there when we would greet people on the street. And as far as my expectations, I told the other two groups that, I was looking for a week off as a vacation, honestly. And I'm sure you guys know it was 80 degrees down there every day plus. So that was and also was looking forward to working on this solar system, being outside, and other than that, it was just, I really didn't know what to expect till we got on that five-seater plane, and I might explain to that a little later on, so.
If you've not been on a single-prop plane before, don't. So we had five full days in Haiti, and each day we had an afternoon activity that was kind of unique to the day, and it was optional. We didn't have to go, but we were encouraged, especially first-timers, to go with these. But Sunday was, since obviously there's no school, Sunday was kind of dominated by the normal Sunday morning grind for folks in Port-au-Paix. If you don't know, Port-au-Paix is on the northern edge of the island. If you've watched Pirates of the Caribbean, it was filmed right north of there. But the Sunday morning was interesting because we left our hotel and we see just droves of people just dressed to the nines in sometimes cleaner clothes than what I'm wearing. And we were impressed at first. I mean, the obvious was these were not the people that we saw when we drove in. We saw people in work clothes. We saw people dirty and these people clean up well. But after that kind of shell shock wore off, we noticed these people are reverent about the way they worship. And it was neat to walk into a Crossroads style worship platform that housed something like 400 members of their church. We met in the Sun Center. So the Sunlight Ministries, they have three buildings that are theirs. They have the academy, they have a preschool, and then the Sun Center is where they put their new Bible college. It's also where Sunlight Church meets. And the church, I didn't realize this going in, we were kind of debating back and forth. We assumed it was going to be a missionary-run church, so a group of Americans leading Haitians in worship. No, it was Haitian-run. Not only that, but the entire leadership structure of the church were locals. The church sprung up out of a Bible study and a house church that was started, 25 years ago by the missionaries there, but they took hold of it and it's their own. They even have daughter churches planted around the city that their folks have put out. And the service was entirely in Creole. You can probably guess we don't speak Creole. But we also don't listen Creole. So, we were kind of up a creek as far as that was concerned. The pastor was nice enough. It's the first skinny guy you see, on the, I think the next slide or the slide after. The pastor was nice enough to at least tell us that we were in Hebrews. But that's about all we got. We got that and we got a kind of a shaky hello to the white people in the back. But, for the most part, it was entirely in Creole, and the music was great. It was hymns, and you guys know I'm not a big hymn person. It's not that I don't like them; I just didn't grow up with them, so I don't recognize the tunes as well as some other people do. There were a couple that we did, and one in particular, they started singing "How Great Thou Art," and I heard the tune, and I'm like, I know that one. And the words were not the words that I used, so I'm listening, and I'm like, I know the melody, but it's not. And then I hear some of the folks that are sitting in the back with us start singing it in English. So you've got it being sung in Creole by 400 something people, and then this pocket of English coming as well. And it was really neat to kind of hear both together. That evening we had a worship service in English this time, with some of the missionaries that are in residence. Some that have been there as long as 12 years, most of them between 5 and 10. And we got to worship with the teachers and their kids who live there. The rest of the week was dominated by morning activities that really didn't change. I was in the high school the whole time, kind of taking inventory of what kind of fruit are coming out of these students that have been here for 12 years plus. And some other guys were doing work projects. Some folks were building a new roof for an enclosure. Wayne was working with the solar project, and he's going to have a couple things to tell you about that.
I will say, when going to church, everything's pretty close proximity there. But you know, we saw a sow. I had two pigs coming down the street, and goats running free. There was one dog there that must have, every dog looked the same down there. And it was just, but it was,
clone dogs.
Well, yes, and but it was very, you know, just to me it was, just wouldn't, you know, expect to see hogs running up down the street there. But, okay, here's some pictures of the solar system. It is on top of the school. The school is three stories, and it's... there again, it's probably about the size of Crossroads. There's several classrooms, probably 12 to 14. These are the structures that they're putting the panels on. Those panels are a little over 6 feet tall and almost 4 feet wide, maybe not quite 6 feet long. That's they had two different sizes there. But anyway, those panels are all being bolted down to that framework. And, of course, the reason being bolted down was because of possibly wind, hurricane, where a situation would come up. But all those panels were had leads on the back of them, and those leads hooked into another cable. And eventually all that was centered down into the circuit box there at the school. So we started there on Monday. There's about six, seven guys off and on worked at that, and it took late Wednesday, early Thursday morning. The head guy that was, he was actually sold solar panels back in the United States. He came with us, and he got sick on Wednesday from, we weren't sure we were going to get this all hooked up, because he knew, I mean, once all your wires get down there, you got to be able to know what you're doing. And he come dragging in, and he sat down, and he looked like death warmed over. So luckily, he got it. You know, got putting the wires in the right spot there, and got electricity running. Those panels, those 90 panels that we put up, were enough electricity to operate that school on a daily basis. They don't charge batteries; it's just all direct sunlight to the circuit box downstairs. There's approximately another 110 left panels to put up. They're going to put them on some other buildings there. So, as we mentioned before, the diesel fuel that's used per gallon per hour is around 9 gallon per hour to run the school and some surrounding buildings and homes. When those panels kick in, it cuts it down to 3 gallon per hour. And, of course, you know, let's do the arithmetic, the math, but it's saving them money as far as buying diesel fuel. It has to be shipped in from Miami and then trucked in, and it's something that has to be dealt with. Not only the power units, there's two main power engines that run 24/7 to, you know, to supply electricity. There's just no utilities in that area. There's no electric poles. There's no plumbing. There's no sewer system. So, and they were very glad everything was running when we left.
Yeah, you find out very quickly if you shower with your mouth open, if that's a habit you have. He found out that was a habit he had. So the week itself, like I said, Wayne was on the roof. It was warm up there too. I came to visit and I didn't visit very long. They were building the solar panels. I was hanging out with the high school students, but in the afternoons, like I said, we had these kind of all hands on deck activities for us to do in the city. And on Monday, we had a chance to go out to market. And some people were asking me, where did a lot of the money that we raised go when we went? Well, obviously a big chunk was travel, but there was still quite a bit left over. The majority of what was left over went towards the solar array, and the money that we raised before went towards the solar array. But another portion went to this trip to market. You'll see we're riding in the back of trucks. They're called tap taps. It's because you tap tap to stop and you'll be able to get out. But the trucks, the beds were welded shut. They had boards nailed around the outside so you could fit 25 or 30 people on the back of these trucks. Yeah, you're giving me that look. That's the same look I gave. These things, I guess they'd been modified because those suspensions didn't move at all. But the trip into the city was a lot of fun, and kind of eye-opening. When we got to market, you'll notice there are only a couple of pictures in this little show going round and round. That's because we were told you can't really bring a camera into market for a couple of reasons. One, if you take your phone out of your pocket in the market, it's probably not going to be able to go back into your pocket because it's going to walk away. I had hands in my back pockets the whole time we were there. You learn to keep all your valuables in the front and keep your hands on your pockets the whole time. But the other was, and we knew this going in, but voodoo is so interlaced in the culture that it's not with the culture anymore. It is the culture in Haiti. So when you go to market, you don't just have bags of food and vegetables and spices and rice. You also have trinkets and artifacts that are used in voodoo worship and voodoo ceremonies. So because of that, we were told it's probably a good idea to not take photos while you're in market, just to not kind of rile up some of the locals. But like I said, a good chunk of the money that we raised was sent specifically for this trip. We went to market to purchase food for about 20 families, 20 local families. And the average income for a family in Haiti is about 200 US, and that's kind of the high end, the average yearly income. And a family would eat on less than a dollar a day, basically. When we prepare our meals here, we kind of start with the protein and we accent around. It's kind of the opposite there. They begin with their carbohydrate and they'll add fruits or sugars around it. And if they're really rich, they'll have like an ounce or so of meat to add. A lot of the families that come to Sunlight, that come to the academy, are just like the families in the area. They eat when they can. They eat when it's available. So we wanted a chance to bless some of the kids who were at the church and or at the school, and some of the families who were in the surrounding area that we knew. So we went into market. We had some high schoolers come with us and translate for us because they were not going to sell me anything. But the food ended up blessing these 20 families. And one, and it's a couple pictures from this one. His name's Noah. There he is. And Noah is—he's a grade schooler, and his dad had a stroke a few months ago, and is recovering now. He's got about half of his movement now, but They were worried he was gonna die, and he's the only adult in the family, and Noah is the oldest of his siblings, and his trip to and from school involved taking a tap-tap out of the city, and he ended up starting his morning trip to school about 5 a.m. In order to get there at 7:30, and we wanted to bless his family with a week or more of food. So we delivered to most of the families that got this. Noah had to take it home because it was too far for us to go. So I walked Noah over to where I assumed was going to be a relative or a friend who was going to drive him home. No, we walked over and he hailed a tap-tap, and this truck with 25, 30 people in the back that I'm sure he didn't know, he had them part. He hopped up in and grabbed his food and went. And the child safety guy in me was like, no, this isn't okay. And they had to reassure me, Chaz, this is how things go here. This is the way things work here. And it was moments like that that I realized, I mean, these people are, I mean, they're just like us. And he was just all smiles. And in the picture, you've got the lady with the little leaf mustache. He was so happy to receive it. Not only that, but he was happy to have someone to talk to while he was waiting for the truck home. He came up and talked to us the next day. And it was really, really neat seeing the money that you all raised, specifically blessing this kid. On Wednesday, we had a chance to do a VBS. I wasn't actually involved in it. I was having a conversation with some of the administration, but Wayne was there. He's got a couple things to tell you about it.
The school there with the kids to go, there's approximately 350 kids there to go every day. They get a peanut butter sandwich around 2 o'clock before they go home. And there's a lady that she starts the morning out making peanut butter sandwiches, and that's what she does for the biggest part of her morning. The kids there, all just like Noah there, they all have these beautiful smiles, they have beautiful teeth, and they're dressed well, and they're eager to go to school. I mean, their teachers said you cannot imagine how much they want to learn, and they're not goofing off. There again, we had to take a tap-tap to the outlining area there to where this church is. And you can kind of see what the pews look like. It's all concrete, very few windows. There's no electricity. This church sprung up from actually a young man who started a connection group and reading the Bible. And that started out with four guys, and then they decided to have a church there. So this is where they meet on Sunday, and they also have VBS usually one day a week. This place is packed full. The pictures here really, don't do justice, but you couldn't put too many more kids in there. I mean, they are packed in there. And there's a group of junior hires, boys that helped lead the service, and they had these kids up and down and hollering, and they were singing to the top of their lungs of just, like BBS kids here in the States. There's a picture here of some gals up on stage. They actually did a skit, and the skit was about Peter walking on water. They had a translator that was explaining to the kids what the Bible verse was about, what they were reading, and they were all ears and eyes and open. They're very excited about it. Also, with the boats, the kids got a little small package of some candy and some stickers. Some of the kids devoured their candy pretty quick. Others stuck it in their pockets. Those boats, right outside that door there is a deep ravine with a creek running up and down it. As we got ready to leave, we saw some little blue boats going to work down there. So it was great to see these junior hires, those boys. They really loved that job, and that we kind of connected with them going back to the mission there.
And on Thursday, we went to a place called House of Hope. House of Hope is an orphanage, and when I say orphanage, It's not what we think of, right? So we think of a place, a shelter for children who have been abandoned, whose parents have passed away, or whose parents can't take care of them, who are waiting to be adopted by another family. That's not entirely the case here. This orphanage isn't able to take adoptions, so the kids are here and they stay here until they're too old to stay. It's a part of a hospital, and the way hospitals work in Haiti, you get care, right? You get your stitches, you get your cast, you get piggyback rides. But you don't get things like food and water and moment-to-moment care like we're used to in hospitals here. That's all on the shoulders of your family. That's all on the shoulders of whoever can come with you. And the lady who runs the orphanage wing, the lady who runs House of Hope, she, as a child, I think she's in her 40s now, as a child, she had tuberculosis and didn't have a family member to come in and care for her through her recovery process and ended up losing the use of her legs. And because of that experience, she wanted desperately for other kids whose parents either can't or won't come help them recover, be able to get the care they needed. So she started this orphanage wing, and there were 28 people who went with us. Half of them or more had been to Haiti before, and most of them had been to Haiti more than 5 times, more than 5 years. And most of the veterans, people who've been there for a long time, they didn't want to go to House of Hope with us. It was too hard to come and to see these kids. And I'm thinking before we get there, we're walking into an orphanage. All right, these kids are going to be sad. These kids are going to be down. And we got there, and that's what we found. Kids who were ready to have fun, kids who were smiling and joyful. And I hope you heard what Wayne said when he said that that the VBS kids were just like kids here. That's kind of a theme to our expectations being broken down while we were there. We didn't see Haitian kids. We saw kids. We saw children of God who have joy, real joy, and are just an absolute pleasure to be around. People have asked us how are we changed by this experience? And, yes, the streets were filthy. Yes, there was crime, there was sickness, there was extreme poverty, but there was a joy that I don't think I've ever seen in the States. There was a joy in the gospel that I don't know if we're able to mirror at least fully. Because you have a people who have, by our standards, nothing. But guys, they've got everything. They have a joy that is almost unexplainable. And a generosity and hospitality that, is a part of their culture. It's a part of who they are as Haitians. But we had folks, and it was just this extreme generosity that came out of a people who appreciated Christ, appreciated people who had come to share Christ with them, and wanted to give back. Wayne, how were you changed by this?
The orphanage hospital was something that you just don't forget. I also think that I was so impressed with the teaching staff and the people that everybody that you met with. Jazz talk, as far as being changed, I told Cindy when I got back, I said, I'm changed. I said, I don't know how long, but anyway, I said, it changed me down there. And the reason that I don't know, and this may be kind of strange in some ways, but, sometimes I have trouble saying, God, I love you. And it's because it's maybe not sincere. It's not a sincere love at times. But, that experience was, it made me see how much God loves me. It's an experience that, I really got it, we got it made here as well. But, that was something I probably wasn't expecting, coming back, it got a hold of me and it was good. And I'll tell you something else. We had, is a great bunch of people to be with. These people are, of course, all solid Christians, but we had, like I said, we had devotions in the evening, and it was just a time that you're away from all the media. I mean, your phone didn't ring. You didn't have to worry about listening to TV or watching TV or listening to the radio. That's all put away. You're just surrounded by all this positive feedback from the school, the staff, and the trips, and all that just bombards you, which is very good. And I just I think that mission trips, it took me, I'm 60 plus. It took me a while to get down there. I'm glad I went. I wish it hadn't taken so long. But, if you decide to go or do something like that, take your kids. That's a big impact. You take your kid.
Pastor Michael, when he was talking with us about tonight, or about this morning, and kind of about our trip in general, he asked, "Will you guys go back if you have the chance?" And other people have asked, "Should we go? Should you go?" The very simple answer is yes. But I'll qualify that. There are a couple of passages that come to mind with the understanding of missions and what missions is. The first we read this morning is Matthew 28, 18 to 20. We call it the Great Commission. And Jesus is talking with his disciples just before he leaves them and says, "All authority in heaven and on earth is given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." And another passage in Acts, I kind of affectionately call the Second Great Commission. "You'll receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." And this is key for missions, because the first idea is, guys, all kinds of people are needed. If you're a financial guru, if you're a builder, if you're a teacher, if you're someone who just loves kids, you can be used on the mission field in Haiti, in Africa, wherever. But missions is more than flying to a third world country to share Jesus. Jesus' disciples were challenged first to witness in Jerusalem, to witness in their backyard. And guys, we have a camp a couple miles outside of town that is constantly sharing the gospel with kids, that some who have never heard it, and some who really need to hear it again. And they are always appreciative of our time and effort in cleaning up, in helping prepare the camp for the year, in counseling, in being a dorm dad, because I need a dorm dad for high school. But they can always use our time. And if you've got an hour in a week, they'll put you to work. Wayne and Indy do a jail ministry here in town, and they'll be the first to tell you it doesn't take a rocket scientist to go in and just share Jesus' love with people who really are kind of at the lowest part of their life. We have three buildings here that are beautiful, but take a lot of work to keep that way. And we could always use help making sure everything is clean here and making sure we have what we need. So if you ever have something you want to do, you say, "I want to do missions, but I don't want to fly on a tiny little plane in Haiti." You don't have to. We have missions in our backyard. We have ways not just to share God's love with people, but to make sure that God's mission, the mission of Christ, is able to move forward in an effective way. We all have a way to play that part. I'll tell you what, I've done small trips like this before, and I'll be the first one to say I want to go back. But the trip has challenged me a whole lot more in the area of my missions stewardship here at home, on how I'm an impact here at home, how I'm able to spread God's love here at home. And guys, I think we can all do quite a bit more. Not that we're not doing enough now, but I think we have that in our minds, that the only way I'm going to be able to be a missionary is to leave, and it's in our backyard, guys.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary, and also a modern worship service, the Sunday morning Oasis, at 9:15 in the Crossroads Gymnasium. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday School Hour for all ages at 9:15 and a Sunday School class for adults in a high school small group at 8 a.m. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.